Japan is in the midst of Rugby World Cup fever, and when the home nation beat Ireland last weekend, fans went crazy. And in remote northeastern Japan, in the town of Kamaishi, the Rugby World Cup has been so much more than just a sporting contest, because the town was devastated by the March 2011 tsunami. But it was an incredibly special moment when they held a Rugby World Cup match there. Our North Asia correspondent Jake Sturmer was in the stands.
To get to Kamaishi, you take a 2.5 hour bullet train from Tokyo, and then it's another hour's drive after that. It doesn't sound like too much travel, but in Japan, that's pretty remote. This town was almost wiped off the map from the March 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Around 1,000 people died there. During the recovery, locals came up with the idea of trying to host a Rugby World Cup match as a way to lift spirits and motivate the town. Remarkably, they won, beating many other bigger cities with established stadiums. When I arrived in Kamaishi, it was a Sunday night and I was looking to find a bar that was showing the Rugby World Cup. I'd heard this town was rugby mad. It dominated the national competition in the 1980s, and ever since, it's been an important part of this area's history. I saw a small restaurant with people huddled around a television. The owner saw me staring from the outside and invited us in. A World Cup match was on. It just happened to be women's volleyball, and Japan was taking on the United States. It was a great game, by the way, just not the one I was looking to watch. Anyway, as our Tokyo bureau producer and I sat down for a beer and a bite to eat, we got talking with some of the locals. Everyone here has a story to tell about the tsunami and what the Rugby World Cup means to them. One of the men in the bar owned the construction company that built the temporary stands in the new stadium. He became emotional while explaining how important the game would be to the town. He told us about cleaning up the piles of debris and taking care of dead bodies with the US Marines that came to help. Another told us a story of how one of the pilots in the Japanese Air Self-Defense Force's elite aerial unit, known as the Blue Impulse, had come from this area. He would be participating in a flyover on the day of the match. On game day, there was a huge buzz and excitement around the stadium. We were there to cover the story for 7:30, in particular the story of former Wallaby Scott Fardy. He was playing with the local Kamaishi rugby team on the day of the tsunami, and he was returning for this special moment.
You think 8 years ago anything like this would have been imagined?
No, I don't think that people could fathom that, you know, at the time. So to think 8 years' time and... you know, the world's been open to this place, and everyone's going to see it today, and you know, billions of people are going to watch it on television, which is, you know, watch it for a good reason, not a tragic reason, which the, you know, initial time people knew about this place.
I never covered the tsunami or its immediate aftermath. Like most, I watched on television the powerful and chilling pictures of the wall of water wiping out this coastline. But I felt an enormous privilege being in this town for this special moment and hearing the stories of the locals and what they'd overcome. 580 people died where the stadium had been rebuilt, and while not everyone was happy about that decision, in the end they decided to build something that would be positive for the town's recovery. The game itself lived up to expectations, with Uruguay defeating Fiji in a major upset, 30-27, but this moment really wasn't about the result. On the way into the stadium, locals gave out handmade tissue cases with a message thanking people for coming to the game. The note inside said, "We received a lot of support from people all over the world during the March 11 disaster. We've finally recovered to this point. Thank you for coming." I think for many, the tissues inside would have come in handy.
And that's our North Asia correspondent, Jake Sturmer.